We're talking about Paul. We're talking about that he had been absent in person, but that he had hope of a reunion being back with these Thessalonians. We talked about that the Word of God, or we had in the past talked about that the Word of God was working in them. We're talking about strengthening the church from verse 17. Really, the thought in chapter 3 begins in the 17th verse of the second chapter. And if you have a comment or question, please raise your hand, and Dale or Mark will bring you a microphone. In verse 17 it says, "But we, brethren, having been bereaved," we said that meant taken, or the King James uses the word taken, or I think the NIV uses the word orphaned, I believe, or deprived. It says, "But we, brethren, having been orphaned or bereft of you for a short while in person, not in spirit, were all the more eager with great desire to see your face." 18 goes on to say, "For we wanted to come to you, I, Paul, more than once, and yet Satan thwarted us. For who is our hope, our joy, or..." Let me start over. "For who is our hope, our joy, or crown of exaltation? It is not even you in the presence of our Lord Jesus at His coming. For you are our glory and our joy." I'm on the verge of needing bifocals, so sometimes those words are doing that. That's why I can't exactly get those sometimes. That's no excuse. I should get bifocals. Paul, he was with them in spirit. He didn't want to be away from them. And I would have you to think about something. He said that he had earnestly tried to return to them. Paul had a big heart. He wanted to be with his brethren. When I think about that, Paul was a preacher. And when we stop and think about that, have you ever known of a preacher that, it was time for him to move along, he was either retiring or, moving to another city, with taking another job or something like that, or doing something else. And the congregation they just hated to see him go. You ever been a part of a congregation like that? That's a wonderful thing. Now, let me let you think about something. Most of the time, why is that that we feel that way? Well, you answer that for me, and then I'll tell you a couple things. Why is that?
We're missing something in our life.
We're missing something in our life.
Right,
that's correct. You're right, Ruby. That can be any of us. But why is that? You said it's a part of our life. What else? People don't like change. Well, let me give you something else to think about. You ever been a part of a congregation where you were just everybody was just jumping up and down? They were glad that the preacher left. I know you hadn't been a part of that. Y'all have all been a part of that, hadn't you? Well, why is that? It must not have been a good one if you... Oh, okay. Okay, I'm sorry. You develop a relationship, yes. They're endeared to you. What else? It's time. We're switching back and forth. It's time for them to go. They're a troublemaker.
Well, no, not necessarily, but...
Oh, it's okay.
But after a while...
It's time for them to go. Their effectiveness is gone. Because we love them, we have a fellowship with them. Those men, usually those men that, when tears are shed when they leave, it's because they've done their work very, very effectively. And their work is still very effective. And I know some preachers who they evaluate, they have the thought, well, my work's not effective here anymore, I need to move along. And that's unfortunate, but sometimes that's the case. Sometimes it takes them too long to figure that out. And that's unfortunate. And they can, nothing can destroy a congregation faster than a preacher. That's just truth. That's just truth. Jack?
This used to be that preachers would go in and establish a congregation and maybe spend 3 years there.
Mm-hmm.
And when he felt that their labor has been fruitful, the congregation's able to stand on their own, then they can go do the same thing to another congregation. And I
right.
think he's come and it says that he only spent three Sabbaths with them, and yet he was going to find out later, you know, Timothy comes back and exalts him and comforts him and edifies him some more.
Right.
But he's left a good impression on these people. He was responsible for their salvation. He's the one who was responsible for the joy that they're feeling and
that's
the hope
right.
that they have, because he planted that in them.
Right.
And he, you know, has that affection for them, you know, too, and hates to leave and definitely would like to come back.
Right. That's right. And, you know, so many times the man who proclaims a message to us and that we're endeared to is a man who has, much like Paul, done much sacrificing. And I'll just put this in here as extra. Sometimes the men in our pulpits will so sacrifice themselves for us, the members of the congregation, to the detriment of their own family. Now, the reason I say that is because we need to be aware of that, and we need to make sure that that's not something that happens. Because I don't think any of us would want that to happen, but sometimes we're so demanding. And we want, you know, it doesn't matter, you know, if the preacher's sitting down eating supper, it doesn't matter. When we call him, we want him to answer our call. And that's not fair. Sometimes there are cases when that has to happen. And any preacher that's worth his salt, when a soul is in danger, is going to attend to that need. But you understand what I'm saying by that. But Paul was endeared to them. He wants them to know that he himself wants to be with them again. And you know, there's something about that. We talked about that last time, how we can go to another state and we may not know anybody where we're visiting at that congregation. But if it's so, it is the case that someone were to introduce themselves to us or welcome us to be with them, and sometimes that's few and far between. So we need to know not to be like that. But if someone does, then we get to talking, and before you know it, well, you know what? Well, they're kin to Clint Laird. Well, I know Clint. You know, he worships with us back in Bowling Green. Or, you know, or they know this one, or they know my Aunt Sally, or they know this one. And before you know, or you know what? We may have went to school together and we didn't recognize them because they looked old and we didn't, and all those things. But we have a common bond with them. But when you're a preacher and you've taught them, now, you know, and I think I said this on last Wednesday night, the folks there may have been using that against Paul and may have been saying, you know what, that guy doesn't care anything about you, because if he did, he'd still be around. I don't know if that's what they said or not, but they could have been. They could have been saying that. But you know what? They could say, you know, he don't care about you. If he did, he'd be here with you. But there's something, and I did say this, and I want to say it again, there is something about being in person that you cannot get on a CD. And you know, some people rationalize that and say, well, I wasn't there, but I'll just get the CD. It's not the same. Can you hear the information? Sure, you can hear the information. It's not the same. It's just not the same. Why is it not the same as being in person? You just listened to what was going on. You weren't there. What else? Man, I sure wish. I thought I wish I could. You won't get a paycheck. Ryan said, can you go to work without being there? I don't think so. Has anybody got a job like that, had a job like that? I don't know of any.
Paul was, he was still working here by sending a letter
to them. Well, sure. Sure. One thing we need to get out of this is we should seek one another. You know, but in verse 18 it said, we wanted. You know, sometimes we read that verse and we said, for we wanted to come to you, I, Paul, more than once, and yet Satan thwarted us. We need to read that like this. For we wanted to come to you. I, Paul, more than once, he wanted. You see the difference that makes? He didn't just, well, I wanted to come back to you. But it didn't really matter if I didn't. He wanted that. He wanted that reunion with them. But Satan hindered them. I don't remember if I said this on Wednesday night or not. The word hindered is a military term. And back in Bible days, it would have been used to describe really the blocking of what a military force would have done to have blocked an enemy. And it would go so far as to tear up a road or break up a road or cut a path in the road where you couldn't pass. Or if it was a bridge, you could cut that off. If they had railroad tracks back then, you could have cut them. In our day, yeah, you could have cut the railroad tracks. And what's that going to lead to? Destruction. Well, do we get any roadblocks today? Do we? Try to go to Nashville. I don't even go that way anymore. I go around. Don't even go through Nashville. Just go around. Don't go somewhere else and get around. Yes, we encounter roadblocks, and I'm not talking about physical. I'm not talking about highway roadblocks on I-65. What kind of roadblocks are we talking about? Spiritual roadblocks. What are some spiritual roadblocks for us today? What can be some roadblocks? Ruby said someone who has been living a Christian life and then falls away from that. And she said she didn't know if that was a roadblock, but it's stunning to her. Well, that's a roadblock. That's a discouragement. That can be a hindrance if we let it be. And the difficulty for us is never putting someone so high up. Sometimes we're bad about that. It's to say, you know, they can't fall. And we put so much faith and so much trust in them, which we should. But we put so much to the point of where when they seek other things besides God, then we're devastated. And sometimes we even fall away. Janet?
Illness can be a roadblock.
Illness. I wrote sickness. Illness, yes. Illness can be a roadblock. You know, we talked about that out in here with Job two quarters ago. And Job dealt with things. What else? What else? What? Loss of a job. I put poverty. I'll just say this. Have you ever been tempted to sin, but you couldn't do the sin that you wanted to do because you didn't have enough money to do it? Now think about that. Have you ever not had enough money to sin like you wanted to? You ever thought about that like that? I'm going to tell you, there's been times in my life, and I feel confident that's why there were times that I don't have enough money, because if I had, I would have sinned. Does that make sense? I think that's really a blessing from God that sometimes, you know, that we can't reach in our back pocket and pull out a $100 bill. And you know what? It's a good thing, because if we could have, we would have sinned. I'm not talking about by pulling out the $100 bill, but it's what we were going to do with it. You know, when you go to the store to buy something, you don't have the money to buy it, you're not going to buy it. And it may be that you were going to buy something that would have been a sin. Or it may have been that you were going to go somewhere that if you went there, you shouldn't have been there. And the only reason that you weren't there, you didn't have enough money to buy a ticket to go. Or you didn't have enough money to get in the door. You see what I'm saying? Now that's a good roadblock. But poverty can be a roadblock to us. What about What else? Any other thing? Jack?
I think one of the major hindrances for him was the Jewish opposition.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he would have spent more time in Thessalonica there had they not hindered him. He went to Berea mm-hmm. and was chased out of there. So that, you know, that was hindered there too. And then somebody mentioned, you know, Satan hindering him in 2 Corinthians, you know, 12:7. He talks about how he was, he says, lest I should be exalted above measure through the abundance of the revelations that was given me, a thorn in the flesh, a messenger of Satan to buffet me, lest I be exalted.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, you know, somebody mentioned that illness can hinder us in some way too. And in other times, you know, he was hindered from coming back to people because, you know, primarily Satan was at work with the opposition all around him that, you know, drove him from one place to another place.
Right. That's right. That's the last thing I wrote was persecution. So persecution can hinder us. You know, if we look on at the third chapter, and we'll be there in just a minute. In verse 3 it says, so that no man may be disturbed by these afflictions. Some kind of affliction, some kind of persecution. Well, if we look on to verse 19 where it says, for who is our hope or joy or crown of exaltation? I want to ask you the question, who is the who talking about there? What's the answer to that who question?
King James
says what?
What is our hope or joy?
Well, what is it? What is it? Yes. And salvation. But who does he say? Is it not even you in the presence of our Lord Jesus at his coming? It was them. Now, why, with Paul being a gospel preacher and a teacher, what were his accomplishments? What were his accomplishments? Souls, converts. All right? What about for the gospel preacher and teacher today? What are their accomplishments? The what?
The same.
The same. It's the same thing. Converts. They're his hope, his joy, his crown, his glory. Let's look at 1 Corinthians chapter 3 for just a minute. One verse. We'll look at two verses. 1 Corinthians chapter 3 and verse 14. It says, if any man's work which he has built upon it remains, he shall receive a reward. He shall receive a reward. Now, that does not say you're saved by your works. That says that you'll receive a reward. There's a difference. You know, a reward can be good or bad. You know, when somebody says, well, they've gone on to get the reward. Well, what can that be? It could be good, but it could be bad. You know, we can give people rewards, and they can be good, or they can be bad too. Salvation's not that way. Salvation's always good. There's never a time. Salvation is never bad. You're getting too far ahead there, Earthel. No, you're okay. I'm just kidding. But what it doesn't say, what we have to remember is reward can be good or bad, but if we're saved, you know, 1 Peter 3 and 21 says baptism saves you. There's a difference. You see, if we what we build with, the material that we build with, you know, we're talking about here building up the church and strengthening the church. Why? Because the Lord's coming. So what's Paul interested in? He's interested in building up and encouraging and keeping these Thessalonians built up and strong in the faith, and not just, you know, he wasn't concerned with just teaching them and then getting out of there. He had to make sure that they stayed saved. And that's important. Like Earthel talked about, if we keep reading, look at verse 15. If any man's work is burned up, he shall suffer loss, but he himself shall be saved, yet so as through fire. We can go on to read 16 and 17. It says, Do you not know that you are a temple of God, and that the Spirit of God dwells in you? 17 goes on to say, if any man destroys the temple of God, God will destroy him, for the temple of God is holy, and that is what you are. Go back to verse 14, and it says, if any man's work which he has built upon it remains, he shall receive a reward. So what's the gospel preacher? What's the teacher? What's if we're a teacher and we're teaching someone else the gospel, what is our crown? What is our glory? It's the converts. You know, here's what we need to remember about that. Even when we don't see the yield, you got that part? We need to keep on plowing the field. Now, I can understand that. You see what that means? Even when we look back and say, well, I never led anybody to the Lord. You know, what's going to happen when the Lord comes back? Starts with a J. The judgment. So the good are going to be, they're going to receive what? A crown of life. And what are the evil going to receive? Eternal damnation and punishment. Now, to these Christians here, that should have been an encouragement to them. Because they're going to win. And you know, probably they're sitting here thinking, you know, look, if we're Thessalonians and we're looking at what's going on around us, you know what? It doesn't look real good. It don't look like it looks like we're losing. We're losing the battle.
God might be coming right back.
Oh yes, He's coming. He's coming. So, we've got to build our faith. But it doesn't say we're saved by our works. It says we're rewarded according to our works. But Paul was concerned because he didn't want a loss. You know, it's not up to us. We can't make the decision for somebody else to be saved. We can't be baptized for somebody else, and some religions teach that. But we can't do that. You know, I can't be baptized for Clint. He can't be baptized for me. I can put a gun to his head and say, Clint, I want you to be baptized. What do you think? What's Clint going to say? I'll be baptized. That's not going to do Clint any good. That's not going to do Clint any good. All that's going to do is make wet Clint. But when Clint decides, hey, I want to be baptized, that works. That works. Paul didn't want a loss. You know, when we talk about a crown of exaltation, in Bible times, athletes would receive, and you know, you've seen this in picture books, and you've seen this in movies and stuff. They would tie up this garland. These, you know, Caesar used to wear one of them, I think. I wasn't around then, but I've seen pictures. You know, they were leaves. You know, they kind of made him look girly looking, but, you know, he would wear that. Well, that was the same thing that they would wear as an athlete, and it was a symbol of victory. And they could point up to it, and they could show it. Victory, pride. The same holds true for Paul, and the same holds true for us today. Any comments, questions up there? Jack.
bring us all, you know, to the climax is that he's preparing them. He's been preparing them for the coming, the day of the Lord. And it's the preparation time. When the Lord comes, there's no more time for preparing. If you haven't done it before time, you're going to be lost.
Right.
You know, Revelation 2:10, you know, talking about this crown. Be thou faithful unto death, and you receive a crown of life. Paul in 2 Timothy 4, when he was ready to be suffered, he tells Timothy, I'm ready to be offered. The time of my departure is at hand. He's henceforth there's laid up for me a crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, shall give me at that day, and not to me only, but to all those also that love his appearing.
Mm-hmm.
And so essentially this is the same message he's given to them. It's going to be there for him. It's going to be available for those Thessalonians. It's going to be for, you know, for those that Timothy, you know, is working with.
That's right. That's right. You know, in the end of verse 19, he says, in the presence of our Lord Jesus at His coming, for you are our glory and our joy. We're going to be in the presence of the Lord. That's really going to happen. I don't know whether to say this, but I'm going to say it anyway. So if you want to shoot me, you can shoot me. But this is just me. I ain't going to argue with you over it. This is just what I think. The fact that these Thessalonians, and I want you to think about this really hard, the very fact that these Thessalonians would be Paul's joy and crown, where? In the judge, in heaven. They're going to be his joy and crown in heaven. That is one of the things that makes it plain to me that we will know one another in a future life. And like I said, I'm not going to argue that with you. If you don't think that, that's fine. Here's what I want you to think about that. I want you to think, how could Paul, and you think about us, how can those who we influence be our crown and our glory if we don't know who they are? But here's something else I want you to think about. You know, when we think nobody's watching us, I'm not an influence on anybody. You know, there's lots of things, and this is what I would tell anybody, because there's lots of things I want to know when we get to heaven. Number one, because I want to be first in line, because I want to ask this question first, because I want the answer to it. Now, let me say this. When we're in heaven, it ain't going to matter. The answer to my question is not going to matter, but I want to know in John 8, verse 6 through 8, what did Jesus write in that sand? Now, when I'm in heaven, I'm going to tell you, I could care less what he wrote in that sand, but I really want to know. I really want to know because it had an impact. It made a difference. And there's lots of different things. My mind can run wild and I can quiz about different things and I can think that, well, he may have wrote the Pharisees' names and the sins that they had done. I can think about that, and that could have had the impact that it did, but it doesn't tell us that. It doesn't tell us. You know, I can think of something else. Did I say he wrote it in the sand? Did I say that? I didn't mean to say that. I meant in the ground. Now, it could have been sandy ground, but it didn't say sand. I don't know why. I've got that in my head, that he wrote it in the sand, and he wrote it on the ground. So, whatever he wrote it in, it was in the dirt or the sand, but he wrote it on the ground, but that's what I want to know. He could have wrote, love one another. You know. He could have wrote, bear one another's burdens.
Did anybody know what he wrote?
Well, they did when they were there. They knew what he wrote, I guess.
I don't know.
It didn't tell us they did, but they acted.
Did
Or maybe they just acted on what he said. But he bent down, he wrote on the ground. It must have meant something. Maybe he just drew a picture. I don't know. But you see what I'm saying? When we're in heaven, that ain't gonna matter no more. It don't really now. You're right, Ruby. Thank you for straightening me out on that. I'll just mark that part off my notes. How about that? I won't. If I ever teach this again, I'm not gonna go down that. I won't talk about that part. No, I'm kidding. But you see what I'm. You see what I'm trying to get us to think about. Okay. There's reasons for what we do. And I'm going to tell you something. I got somebody in my mind right now. Let me tell you something. If they were to fall away, I'm going to tell you, I'd be crushed. I'd be crushed. But I'm going to tell you, when we're standing there at the judgment bar of God, and I can look over and I see them and they're in, you know what? I'm so thankful. I'm so thankful. But you know what? If I don't know that, if I'm in, you know what? I'll deal with not knowing that. That's why I'm not going to argue about that with you. Sam, sorry.
Poor Mark's sitting here for a while.
Go ahead.
A slightly different take on,
okay,
on that with the crown when we see Jesus. We've been told to use our talents.
Mm-hmm.
And if we do not, we're going to have a calling for that one.
Yeah.
And also those that teach have an added responsibility. So it's just a slightly different take. If you don't use it, you're not going to get that crown, but you're going to have to answer for why did you not use that talent.
Right.
And I'm hypocritical as I don't use mine enough as it is, and it's something I should be.
Well, you need to do better.
I do.
No, I'm kidding. Well, you do.
No,
you do. But I need to too. We all do. But of course, we're going to be held accountable. Well, what's the opposite? You're talking about the opposite of that. What's the opposite of joy? What's the opposite of if we're talking about Paul, if he's got a joy and a crown in heaven, what's the opposite of that? No joy and no. Well, what's the opposite of no joy? Sorrow. Sadness. You'll be at the judgment bar. But sorrow and sadness ain't going to be, you're not going to be headed to heaven. You're going to be told, you're going to be eternally separated from God. And so as horror, at the horrors that would be, we can only imagine. Our mind can't even comprehend that. But the opposite of that is heaven, and our mind can't even comprehend that. I'm trying to get us to get our mind around what this really means of why that matters. Why does it matter? Sam, I'll put you on the spot. Why does it matter that you're a good influence on me? And you are. I'm telling you that. I'm not making that part up. But why does that matter?
It's my duty.
It's your duty. Well, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Now, that don't sound real easy. That doesn't sound easy. It's not. Well, wait a minute. I'm glad I don't have a role in that then. I don't have a part to play in that, do I? Right? Or do I? Oh, you're going to put it back on me. So I've got a duty to you too. And I've got responsibility too. So I can't sit here fat, dumb, and happy and let you do the work. I got to do my part. I got to use my talents. That's what you said. What a concept. That's what the Bible teaches us. Isn't it? It is. Clint. I knew who he was.
Just a couple thoughts about what you've been talking about there. One thing that kind of going to what Sam was talking about, you know, talking about Paul's joy and glory and crown and all those things, I don't want to make this too flippant because this analogy doesn't necessarily work all the way through, but I think about, like, for me at work, my boss is a vice president that travels the world 362 days of the year. I see him a couple days a year. But he's going to do my evaluation in a couple weeks. How does he evaluate me? He's not seeing what I'm doing. He's not there. But it's the other people that I interact with that he knows that I do my job because he's over all of that and he sees all the pieces working together. Mm-hmm. So not to say that God can't see what's going on unless the Thessalonians get to heaven and, you know, right. He knows that Paul did his job. But sort of that, I mean, I can see Paul thinking, you know, when he gets there and they get there, that's part of his joy, glory, and crown. But the other thing I wanted to say, kind of on a different note, is you were asking about, you know, why is that important? And we talked about it back in chapter 2. You know, he was making that case in the first half of that chapter about, you know this, and you know how we acted with you and how we treated him. And we talked about how that was all to be a rebuttal to the things that he was being accused of. Mm-hmm. And he said, I didn't do this to please men. I didn't flatter you. I didn't do any of this. I wasn't looking for praise from men, from you, or from anybody else in verse 6. God is our witness, he says. And so I think all of that, I mean, that's the first part of chapter 2, and then here's we get to the end of chapter 2. He's saying, you know, you're my joy, my glory, my crown. It's not praise of men or anything. So all these things that they're saying I did or didn't do, none of that matters. And I don't think Paul would be the type to, you know, to get to Judgment Day and look across and see those guys and, you know, pull a neener, neener, neener on them. Yeah. But, I mean, in a way, I mean, that's what's going to happen. When Judgment Day comes, the people that had the things to say about Paul are going to see Paul standing across that great chasm with the Thessalonians.
Right.
And that's his joy, his glory, and crown.
Right. And I'm going to tell you, what better, I mean, you put yourself there. What better, what would your feeling be to be standing at the judgment bar of God if you're Paul with those faithful Thessalonians? Well, let's bring it a little closer to home. What would it be if we're standing there at the judgment bar of God with our spouse? And we hear, well done, two times. Can you project yourself there? That matters. And it mattered to Paul. He was concerned about them. Why? They were young Christians. That's why our goal, what he was helping them to do. Let's keep reading. We're going to see what he's going to do here. Any other comments, questions on there? Man, that clock goes fast. We're going to look at the first five verses of chapter 3. It says, therefore, here's what Paul's going to do. It says, therefore, when we could endure it no longer, and what's he talking about endure? He's talking about him worrying about these Thessalonians because they're separate from them. When we could endure it no longer, we thought it best to be left behind at Athens alone. And we sent Timothy, our brother, and God's fellow worker in the gospel of Christ, to strengthen and encourage you as to your faith, so that no man may be disturbed by these afflictions. For you yourselves know that we have been destined for this. For indeed, when we were with you, we kept telling you in advance that we were going to suffer affliction. And so it came to pass, as you know. For this reason, when I could endure it no longer, I also sent to find out about your faith, for fear that the tempter might have tempted you and our labor should be in vain. Keep on building up the church. Why? Because the Lord's coming. Paul couldn't stand it any longer. He couldn't worry about them anymore. You know, it tells us that, you know what? Things don't always work out the way we think they're going to work out. They don't always work out the way that we plan for them to work out. And that's what happened in Paul's case because he was separated from them. You know, he couldn't hide his fear for them any longer. Well, I'm sure Paul didn't want to be alone. But you know what? He wasn't worried about himself. He was worried about them. So what did he do? You know what? Fellas, I'll be alone. I'll be on my own. Get over there and help them. And then he sends them a letter. Paul had a great concern for them. You know, he sent Silas to Berea, Timothy to Thessalonica. You know, this probably could have shown the Thessalonians, you know what? We don't care what they're saying. Paul does love us because look, he's sending Timothy to come back to us and help us. You know, Athens, where he was, it was full of idols. It was a city, you know, when we talk about the word alone, Athens was a city farther away from God than, you know, it was diametrically opposed to God. So you talk about alone, okay, how many of us, let's say, whatever the city is, you know, Metropolis. If Metropolis, whatever that's a real city, sorry. Make up a city, you know, city USA. And they're the city farthest away from God. How many people are going to sign up to go there? And it's only going to be one of you. Only going to be one Christian in that city. It's going to be you. Who wants to go? You'll know what it feels like to be alone. When you go to the grocery store in the city that's farthest away from God, and you go to the, you know, you go here and you go to the local marketplace and you go there, everywhere you go, nobody's doing nothing. Nobody, you don't go into a restaurant and see, there wasn't restaurants back then, I'm sure, but you know what I'm saying. When you go into that city and nobody cares about God, you're not going to see anybody praying before they eat. You're not going to see anybody acting like the way, in a godly manner. It's only you. Now, you see what being alone is all about? That's alone. Who wants to be alone like that? Now, God, of course, was with him, but that's alone. That's why he longed. You know, Art talked about this week. He didn't want to leave. You know why? Because it helped him. Paul didn't keep the consequences of obeying the gospel from them. He told them in the beginning they would be persecuted, but you know what? He's telling them, keep on remembering who's in control. You can overcome this. I'm going to send Timothy to help you. I'm going to write this letter to help you. We're going to help you. We're going to strengthen you. We're going to encourage you. We're not going to tear you down. And we're going to build your faith. Can we learn some things from that? The bell's about to ring. Can we learn anything from that? We better. Ruby said we better. What can we learn from that? What's the lesson for us? Paul was afraid that Satan would get to them.